You're listening to the Young Opportunist Podcast.
Hey guys, we are so pumped to release this week's episode with our good friend and mentor, Owen Rask. We were lucky enough to even join Owen in the Rask Australia studio in Melbourne. We've said this a million times, but this really was a pinch me moment for the both of us.
For those that haven't listened to our previous episodes with Owen, episodes 15 and 18, we definitely recommend you go back and listen to the both of them. However, as a quick overview, Owen is the founder of Rask Australia and the host of two of Australia's largest finance podcasts, the Australian Finance Podcast and the Australian Investors Podcast. And he is also the host of the Australian Business Podcast.
Now, Reese, that's a lot of podcasts. As the title suggests, this episode is full of personal finance tips and tricks that will help you level up your savings and investing game in 2023. And if you have no game to even start with, that's all right also. Owen's got you. Now, Reese, what do we actually cover in the episode?
In this week's episode, we discuss Owen's top three best personal finance tips and tricks you can implement today, how to gain direction and momentum for long-term financial goals, how to start investing right now.
And trust us, it's really not as hard as it sounds.
And how you can be more intentional with your money. These are some of the key takeaways throughout the episode, but there is plenty more to come. As always, Owen is full of golden nuggets.
Now, as a side note, if you're listening to the show and haven't hit that follow button,
then what are you even doing?
And if you want to support the show and make us really happy, could you please press that follow button on your chosen podcast platform and even a cheeky rating?
Please, please, please.
That way you don't miss out on new episodes and you might even make us blush.
With that said, let's get underway with today's episode.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. This is a little bit of a pinch me moment for Reese and I. We're currently sitting across from Owen in the Rask office in the city of Melbourne. So thank you for having us, firstly.
Dream studio as well. There's three cameras. We're only used to one.
and our one is like 1080p. So these are all 4K. We're feeling pretty grateful right now.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on the show.
We wanted to discuss more about practical investing and personal finance, personal finance hacks and advice for us young people. You know, we really want to stem into value-based spending and simple little tips and tricks that you can learn along the way.
And we got the God in front of us as well. So we couldn't leave this place without picking his brain on this.
Definitely. So let's get underway with it.
So Reese and I were talking recently about this dilemma, and I think it's a generational shift with young people. And I don't know if it's driven by social media and like this kind of whole instant gratification culture, but this is perception around like DCAing, like dollar cost averaging into the stock market and I guess responsible investing more broadly, which I guess you could probably categorize ETFs and which is exchange traded funds into that kind of category. But a lot of young people may consider that boring, not exciting. Also, with social media, the algorithm really likes big, flashy Bugattis, you know what I mean? Like, and responsible investing isn't that. So, it's kind of a hard sell and almost hard to beat the algorithm in that regard. So, what would you say to these young people listening to this, feeling, I guess, unmotivated, firstly, because they aren't a millionaire yet at 20, like social media kind of promised them? And secondly, why they should focus on long-term investing and, I guess, delay that gratification?
Yeah. The last few years, which is probably the last 5 or 10 years, which seems like a long time for someone that's 20, has also coincided with a period of like super exuberance. Mm. So you've got like things like cryptocurrencies. Some of them seem legitimate, but a lot of them aren't. And we're now starting to find out like the ugly side of that. But yeah, we've seen this exuberance and it's made people think that that's normal. It's not normal. If you study, like I studied 150 years of the stock market and realized that the profits of companies only go up between 6% and 7% a year. That's on average, right? Mm. So some years they go backwards, some years they go forward. So over the long term, what you basically get is that. Now you could keep your money in cash, like in a bank account, but you're not going to get anything for it really, because like you might earn your few percent, but then you have this thing called inflation, which is just the cost of the coffee or this beer or that book going up. Mm. That's going to go up probably as fast, maybe even faster than the money in your bank account. So you're going to lose. Like next year, you're going to be poorer just by having your money in a bank account. So you have to find things that grow. Now you can shoot for the stars and you can go like that rocket neon sign behind there. You can go for something like that. And you might have a very, very small chance at a very big return. Mm. And those are the things that when they go right, we tend to hear about. And then you could just do the boring thing, as you're saying, Ben. Like you could just go for like an exchange traded fund, you could put money in super, which is even more boring.
At least boring in quotation marks. Yeah. Boring in quotation marks.
Or you could, like, the thing that people tend to like is housing, because even though it's boring, it's actually exciting in the fact that you can touch it and you can feel it. So it's, you got a tangible benefit. So that's another really good option for people that think that, like, stocks are super boring as well. But I guess the answer to your question is, like, how many people on the Forbes rich list, if you look at that rich list, made money, like, trading stocks or trading crypto? The answer is basically none of them. You might, like, talk about, like, SBF or someone like any of these guys that are, like, in that space right now, in that trading space right now. They've gone straight up the rich list and then straight out, straight off the other end, like, because of one thing or another. And so the people that are on that list are people like Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan made money not through playing basketball. Like, people think, I mean, he's the greatest basketball player arguably of all time. But the most of his money actually comes from investing in a basketball team. And he gets $4.50 per shoe of Jordan. So that's how he makes his money, right? Not through dunking on people. And the other thing is, like, then you look at, say, like, Oprah Winfrey, if we take the other side of the ledger. And Oprah originally made – so she was a television host and, like, the big, one of the biggest African-Americans, of, like, in that space ever, probably the biggest ever. And she originally had a job that paid her $500,000 a year, which was super valuable at the time. But she met a lawyer, and the lawyer said to her, you know, you are the face. Like, this is your show. This is the Oprah Winfrey show. And what happened was, she went back to the production studio and said, oh, well, I want royalties. Like, I want, like, 3 or 4%, which is normal when you have a show like that. So then she became an owner of something. And what they said was no. So then she said, okay, well, I'm not doing it anymore. And then so she took the money that she had, and she went and bought a 2-acre plot of land. She built her own studio. And that is now what's called Harpo Studios, which is one of the biggest. They used to have their own channel in the United States. And she then produced the Oprah Winfrey show. She just distributed it. And the production studio and the distribution network that originally was paying her ended up licensing it from her. So they took the 4% and she took the rest. Like, so that's how she made billions of dollars. And the moral of the story here is that every one of the people that you will ever see that have made it really, to a really high level of wealth, have two things in common. One is they've owned businesses. And two is they've taken a long time to make that wealth. Like, even if you take, say, like, Dr. Dre, he made most of his money from Beats, from selling Beats to Apple. He didn't own all of it. Like, I think he made $660 million if you look at his net wealth that year, which was more than he made in, like, the 10 or 15 years prior selling records. So at the end of the day, like, these were things, like, these were, like, long-term investments that paid off in the long run. And for young people that are getting started, the most important thing, and we talked about, like, being an entrepreneur and all that, that's obviously going to be your ticket to wealth. If you want to hit that list, that's what you need to do. But there's a huge risk involved. For most people, you don't need to do that, and that's fine. Like, I have this order of priorities, which is, if you want to grow wealthy, there are a few ways to do it. One is, like, invest in your own business. The downside is you can be wrong and you give up a lot of your time and you can go bald like me. Or you can, number two is you can invest in someone else's business. And you might think, oh, that sounds really foreign, but that's what the stock market does. The stock market allows you to invest in someone else's business. And you don't have to run it. You don't get a say on what they do, but you can still own part of it. And that's what I was talking about, the stock market going up. The problem with that one is there's this behavior element that comes in where people are, like, really short-term focused, to your point, or they're really scared when things go down. And you have no control over that. Whereas in a private business that you run, no one tells you what the value of your business is every day, so you don't really care.
Yeah.
And if, like, the third thing is you can just buy assets. So you can buy, like, property, you can buy things that go up in value, basically. So those are basically the things that you can do. And you want to be, like, if you're not interested in the first one, I think Robert Kiyosaki in his book Rich Dad Poor Dad has a cash flow quadrant. You want to identify where you want to be on that cash flow quadrant. So this would be like your income, your contracting, you're a part owner, you're a full owner. That's basically like the quadrant, the four different parts. And you want to make sure that you're putting as much as you can into the bit where you're earning passive income and it's growing in value. And the stock market is the place to do that. But the stock market can also be treated like a casino by some people. And those are the people that have really bad outcomes on average from the stock market. They're the people that invest in like speculative stuff, trying to get rich really quick. If you just think about the get rich quick slogan, think about it like this. Just take away the quick. And if you take away the quick, you just get rich. How do you do that? You do it over time. And so just some practical examples. When you're young and when you're new to anything, the best thing you can do is try to earn more. Like there's this old financial planning joke, which what's the best advice you've ever given a client? Earn more. Like it's that simple. Because if you have a bigger shovel and you can shovel more into your long-term investments, you're going to do that quicker and that's going to have the most impact in the first few years. The first $1,000 is the hardest, first 100, first a million. Because once you've got to 100K, say, if you are saving 10 grand a year, your investments will probably go up 10% in a diversified portfolio. Like it can go up, like that's not uncommon.
Yeah.
So you would actually earn more at 100K from the investments going up than you would be adding to it. And there comes a tipping point, which is probably for most people, even if you're at uni and you've got a second job, it probably is, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years into the journey if you're really focused. It's not that far away. So if you're 22 and you're thinking, okay, 30, when I hit 30, I want X, like that's what you should be aiming for. And seriously, like you don't need to earn that much to get hundreds of thousands of dollars by the time you're 30, including a house. It's possible. The first few years are hard because you need to slog, you need to work hard. And when I say work hard, you might need multiple jobs.
Yeah.
Like some really good inspo for everyone. There's a guy on, he's got a blog, but he's also got a podcast, Aussie Firebug. I don't know if you guys have heard about him.
Yeah,
financial independence. He's from Victoria as well. He talks about this and he achieved financial independence. And I think he's about my age, and over $1 million invested. But there are heaps of people like him, heaps. Mm. I know a guy, his name's Pete Wargen. He's a bit older now, but he went from basically getting on the beers every night, having a shit liver, like working like a slave, no savings. And if he listens to this, he'll forgive me for saying this. But then he turned his life around. Like him and his partner, they were like, okay, let's do this. Let's be positive. Let's not go out on a Friday night. Let's do something else instead. And you have to make those little sacrifices along the way. But if you have the goal of saving money, you'll save it a hell of a lot quicker than you are right now. And so bigger shovel is the first thing.
Yeah.
And then just knowing like that even if you sacrifice on a round of beers or something like that, if that might not be that important to you, you just got to find out like what is important.
Mm.
If it's more important to have a lot of money, like not to be like an unsocial person, like a hermit that doesn't spend any money, but if that's more important to you, then don't feel bad about spending money or not spending money. Actually embrace it.
There's so much to break down. Firstly, in terms of like, let's go for uni students, if that is $50 a week or if that's adjusting each week to you're working on a casual basis, you're earning a bit more this week, let's put a bit more in this week. For next week, I'm not going to work as much. I've got a couple assignments, a couple exams, drop that back. But as long as you're just doing it, I guess, and putting a little bit of money in at the start. And as you said, later on, when the time's right and your holidays, get a few extra jobs. That way that can increase to 200, 300, 300 a week or at your own level. And I guess that comes down to value-based spending. And I'd love for you to talk about your vision board and the importance of that in terms of identifying what you really value in life and having those goals and North Stars that you're working towards, because that makes it a lot easier. We talked about this in our previous conversation, is that makes it a lot easier to stop and say, sorry, boys, like I'm not buying this round.
Mm.
My goals are to travel Europe next year. It's going to cost X amount. I know that if I save $200 tonight, it's going to help in the long run. So yeah, I'd love for you to go through that.
Yeah, sure. So this is only something that came to me recently. It was actually through Kate, my colleague. So yeah, a lot of particularly guys struggle with this, I'd say, more than ladies. If you look at like a teenage girl's like wall in her bedroom, she'll have like photos of like her friends or something like that. Like this is very cliche, but and stereotypical generalization, but you'll see that stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah.
In a guy's room, you probably just see a picture of, like, I don't know, whatever, like Arnold Schwarzenegger flexing or something like this. Like, I don't know what it would be, or like some hot chick or something.
But that's in your room.
Yeah. Which is fine. But the thing is, like, what the vision board is what, like, when you have, like, photos of people on your wall or friends or whatever, what it actually is reminding you of the things that you value. Mm-hmm. And so a vision board is basically that. It's about just having a list of things that you think are important to you. And these will change over time. But for me, like, I think you guys can share this. I've got it here just in front of me, like a snippet of mine. Like, I've divided it in terms of, like, 20s aren't there anymore because they're behind me, but 30s, 40s, 50s, and just the things that I want to do. You know, these are like the big rocks. So one of them's like, I want to get to a 4-day work week. I want to climb Everest base. Like, I just want to do the base camp, not the full thing. But I want to do these things, right? And I've put them down just kind of randomly, but also a lot of them are travel related. There's other things on there that I didn't put in the list, but you know, I want to live on a farm and I want to do these things. And when I do the vision board, and I've just done it in Notion, you can do it in a Google Doc, you can do it on a piece of paper, just anywhere where you can kind of change it regularly, I guess, is important. And what you want to do is you want to have these things which are like, wow, I would love to do this thing, and I want to have that North Star, I want to have that thing that I'm generally heading towards, because then everything else can just fall into place behind it. Mm. So, you know, if, like, one of the things is I want to buy a farm, well, I'm going to need a certain amount of money to that. And this is a really good exercise where you don't need to be a finance person. Like, you don't, if your partner or your girlfriend, your boyfriend, whatever, your siblings aren't interested in finance, you can get them to do this. And it's actually a bit of fun because you can be like, hey, go and, like, check out this thing. And let's do it together. Like, where do we want to travel? What do we want to do? And then you can click on it and you can be like, well, how much is that going to cost?
Mm.
And then you can work back from there. And for me, having these basically just says, well, okay, I'm doing this thing called investing every month. I could be putting a couple grand away or whatever. Or I could be going to the pub. I could be buying a new TV. I could be doing this stuff, a new car, whatever. But you'll realize that those things aren't on the trajectory to that. Those things that mean more to you.
Yeah.
You might have a car on there. You might have a brand new TV. That's fine. Or an Apple iPhone, like the latest one. That might be your thing.
Yeah.
Put it on there for sure and embrace that. But for me, it's not. So I don't need to worry about that. So when it comes to having, like, I call it spending with intention or investing with intention. So there's a reason behind it. And I didn't have this when I was 20. I didn't have this when I was 25. It's taken me a long time to figure this out. And so for me, it's just about getting to that point. And a lot of the criticism that people get is like, well, why are you spending that money now? You should be having fun now. Now, that's valid. But the thing is, if you know what you want, you're not really sacrificing a lot because you already know that this is the thing that matters.
Mm.
If the other stuff, like around a beer, is important to you, go and do that. Or in my opinion, like, one of the things that is really valuable is just making sure you have an amount of money every week that is just fun. Mm-hmm. Like, just do whatever you want with it. If you're in a relationship, you can have, like, an account where you both contribute to, and that's, like, your money together, your fun money. Because then you don't feel guilty when you spend it.
Yeah.
You know, we have this thing. And there's another exercise that I wanted to share with you guys, and it's Kate, my co-host, talks about it a lot, and it actually comes from Ramit Sethi in the US. And it's basically a very simple exercise that anyone can do. We've got a PDF for it, but you could do it in a Google Doc. Yeah, there it is right there. So it's just like, you just, on a piece of paper, just get the things that you enjoy doing the most in one column, and then in another column, the things that you spend the most money on, right? This is as simple as it is. You can do we've got 10 things, but you could do 5 things. You could do 3 things. The things you spent the most money on in order and the things that you enjoy most. Then draw a line between them. So match them up across the two columns. And what if you find, like, a massive mismatch between what you're spending and what you get joy or pleasure from, then you know that that thing's not really part of who you are. So get lost, like, get it off there. Like, say, see you later. And yours would be different to mine.
Mm.
We'd all have different, you know, I guess, joyful pleasures. Get rid of it. Like, just remove it from your life and embrace that everyone's different.
Yeah, 100%. And, like, let's say I I go out every weekend and I'm like spending money on beers or, and I don't actually value that. I haven't actually made the assessment. I'm just spending. Mm-hmm. If I made the decision to just, I want to save more. If I, in my head, like just said that, I don't even think that that's a good enough reason to save, because like if I get invited out for beers, if I'm just trying to save and there's not a reason why I'm saving, then I'm probably just still going to spend money because it's like, oh, what am I actually saving for? It's like bringing back to that why. Like it, everything should revolve around a why, I guess. Like, why am I saving? I'm saving because I want to go to Europe next year. So it makes that whole decision-making process like way easier. You don't actually have to like challenge your own thoughts. Like, doesn't have to be a big decision to make every single time. Like, why are you going to save?
And to restrict that even more. So in terms of spending your money on things that you don't value, you had it in here. Oh, and automation, like it is key. And we, when we first came across this, talking to Aaron Nannini, we like it's life changing, really. Taking away all that emotion around, like spending. I'm putting $100 this week into investments. Like that does you would, well, for me personally, I would wait off on that moment. Like, if that didn't happen automatically, I would say, oh, like, geez, I don't know. I spent a bit of money on the weekend. Maybe I should just drop back this week and not invest. So, and if that's what we've done is, like, we, as you, same as you, Owen, like, we really value traveling and making memories with friends and family. So, we've even allocated, like, accounts that have your travel account. And even if you're not investing that purely into the stock market, you can put an allocated amount each week into that travel account. So when you're ready to book your trip, you already have like $500 sitting in there, and that basically feels like free money. You haven't really decided, oh, I'm going to transfer $100 from this account where my pay goes into to buy this trip, which feels like a lot of money when it's already been dumped into that account.
Yeah. And you can do this in so many ways. Automation is so important because it actually circumvents your biases. So it basically says, yeah, you know what? I'm pretty shit with money, so I'm going to set up this automation so it doesn't even – I can't even touch it before it like comes to me. Like, it's just – like, that's in a different place. And some people when we go to events, one thing we do is we actually give away free books, and it's a transaction. We give away books, like finance books, in exchange for a money-saving or investing tip. And someone came up to us recently, and I didn't know that a lot of people did this, and it seemed to be quite common at the FinFest event was people would get their employers to send some of their pay to a different account.
Oh, really?
So, completely different account. And all of their direct debits would come from that account. There's no bank. There's no card attached to it. There's no nothing. And they wouldn't even have to open the bank account, like, to check it, because they knew how much was going in, on what day, and when things were coming out. And so, that was, like, automation on steroids, because it's not even, like... Like, people used to do that where they get their employer to send extra to super. Yeah. You can still do that, or you can just do it yourself. But like, here's my ultimate combination of tools to automate. If you want to automate your bank accounts, you probably want to use something like Up. Up is like the most automation friendly, I would say. If you want to automate your investments, the best platform for that, in my opinion, is Perla. Disclosure, they are a sponsor of ours, but I just think they are the best. Like, if anyone uses it, they probably say the same thing.
What does it do? What?
So
you can, does it auto? I imagine you. Do an automatic transfer from your bank to the exchange, and then does that automatically just buy?
So with Perla, what actually happens is you don't even need to do... So most of the brokerage accounts require you to do like a recurring transfer from your bank account. Perla will pull it. So rather than it be pushed, they'll pull it. So it will read your bank statement like Xero does for small businesses, if you have a small business. And it will automatically read how much is in there, and it will say, okay, now it's time to invest. And it will take that money and it will automatically place the trades for you. So you don't even need to log in.
Yeah, because that's another barrier, right? Like logging in to your self-wealth account, making sure you buy when the market opens. Like
That's something that we were trying to find an exchange that did that. So, that's actually really helpful for us personally. Yeah. Because like we had automatic transfers to another exchange. But, yeah, then we had to physically go in there.
And then even we should know this well and truly, like more than the typical average person. Money would just sit in my self-wealth account.
Yeah.
Just cash.
Yeah.
I'd look at my portfolio and it'd be like 20% invested into this, the rest cash. And I'm like, well, what's the point?
It's silly.
You don't make time for those like admin-y tasks because, you know, life goes on. So yeah, we might have to jump onto that.
I mean, and some of those work, like full disclosure again, Self-Wealth is another sponsor of ours, but their target audience is a little bit different. So their target audience is typically like bigger balances, typically, you know, older investors. And so what happens there is they don't want that because they already have the money there. They don't want it to be automatically invested. Mm. They want a bit more control. So that's why you have the kind of different experience. But then there's a final piece, which I don't want to miss out on, is like around about 10% of Australians fall into this bucket, actually, might be just a little bit less, is for people that are self-employed, there's a new thing in Australia called Henry. It's from New Zealand, H-N-R-Y, so just take the E out of Henry. This thing treats your self-employed salary, like if you're a chippy, if you're a creative artist or something, it treats your contracts and your salary as if it was a salary. So it creates a bank account for you. It doesn't charge you anything until you get paid. And then it automatically takes out the GST. It automatically takes out how much tax, your HEX. It'll even make the contribution to super. You can even make an automated investment.
Wow.
All from this one app. And it charges you 1%, and it's only when you get paid. And so, like you say, if you are, like say you have like a freelance gig where you earn lumpy amounts of money, it automatically does all that for you. So it's super easy. And there are these tools available to everyone now, and most of them are free to start. So go and give them a crack. Just the names that I mentioned. You can do the auto investing with Vanguard too. Although I don't use that platform for my investing because I use the ETFs but not the platform.
Yeah.
They do a thing where you can start with $500 and then every automation is $200 amount of investments. Whereas with, I think with Pearly, you can do it from a few cents. With Sharesies, you can buy shares like in the cents. So if you're starting really small, one of the things that I'd say with automation is start with the minimum number. Don't start with like, I want to save $1,000 a week and you only earn like $1,200. Like that would be crazy because you're going to feel bad about it every time it doesn't work. So start really small and just let those little bits trickle away in the background. Like I talked to some of my team or friends and they are like in the finance industry and they say the very best investment they've ever made is just this automation, which they forgot about.
Mm.
That's why Raise is so good too. Like the Raise app for roundups and stuff. Like it's, because it's automated investing. We have a Raise account for our business.
Wow.
So yeah. For that reason.
It's so good. Before we move on, you've mentioned two other great personal finance tips. One of them being around creating friction. And then a second one is listening to a podcast a day. So can you touch on those before we move on?
Yeah, sure. So just on the podcast, obviously I'm biased because I run a podcast, but
same. So
yeah, you guys might be in the same camp as me. But yeah, so because you don't like all the tools are available, but also the information is available. So you need some way to distill that, like some way to break all that stuff down into like a manageable kind of like universe of ideas. And so that's what we do through podcasts. It's what some of our peers do, like Shares in the Money, Equity Mates, My Millennial Money. Those are the big ones alongside us. And I would just say if you listen to for 15 minutes a day for 6 months, you'll learn everything you need to know about finance. Then you can put it down and walk away. Like with those automation tools that I just mentioned, that's enough. And I guess that's probably like the key thing is that like finance is alongside medicine is probably the most important thing in your life because it's how we like our society works.
Mm.
But the difference with finance and medicine is that you can learn basically everything you need to know in 6 months about finance. You can't do the same thing with medicine. You still need like lots of experts. So I would say that's probably the thing. And I guess like combining the vision board, which is your North Star, using automation for the good things and adding friction to the bad things. So like this would be an example. Like say you don't want Afterpay on your phone. Like flat out, you just don't want that on your phone because that will lead you down a path which then leads to credit cards, which then leads to paying that back with another. And it's just like, just don't do that. Get that off your phone. Get your sports bet. I know this is going to be like for the boys, it's going to be like, yeah, but get sports bet, all that sort of shit off your phone. If you are having an issue, if your mate has a friend that has a problem with that, go into his phone and just delete the app. And you'll think that he did it and you just don't even know. Just hold down on it and press delete app. Because like those things are not good on the whole. Like some people manage it, but those things are not good.
Mm.
So those are temptation just staring you in the face. Just get rid of it. You can still do it. Like a lot of people do the same with brokerage accounts. like I mentioned how Perl, you don't even need to log in, but and Sharesies are actually moving into that automation as well. But the thing is, a lot of people can't handle it being on their phone. So maybe just get rid of that as well and just do it through a laptop, iPad, via the web browser. It's a bit more annoying.
Yeah.
But if it stops you over trading, yeah, get rid of it. And then, you know, obviously talk about the podcast is just about learning.
Yeah. If people just take those four things, like they're on their way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's 90% of finance done.
Yeah. And it took us so long to realize that. Like, we thought that it is scary. It's daunting when you say the word finance to people, and for us when we were starting out. But, like, that's most of the general
personal finance things.
Automation, you know, removing those emotional biases that get involved when investing, and making it easier to invest.
I remember listening to We Study Billionaires episode from the Investors Podcast over in America, and they had an episode on personal finance, and they talked about how many people, older men and women, that have died, but with like $2 million in their investing account because they just set up this thing like years and years and years ago that just like kept growing. They didn't even like look at it. They probably even like forgot that they had it, but like it was probably over like a pretty high growth time, like over 40 years, especially over the past 40 years. Yeah, it was like at $2 million and they've passed away, and there's just like so much money just sitting in these accounts. So yeah, like compound interest, like everybody on the podcast have heard us like yap on about compound interest and compounding everything. But that's just like another example.
Yeah, this is where you get passive income. You don't get passive income from the get rich quick schemes. Like you just don't. You can stake your crypto, but it's not like it's not a sustainable source of income over the long term. So the where you get wealthy is by investing in things that create value. And so that can be the whole stock market overall, thanks to ETF. So you can get everything in the stock market in one. Mm. And that's what makes it valuable, because even if one of those companies goes down, the rest will still be fine. And it's really that simple. Like, it's really that simple. And the famous idea is that being good with money has less to do with how smart you are and more to do with how you behave. Mm. And that comes from Morgan Housel, who wrote the best book on finance, which is called The Psychology of Money. And that sums it up. Like, I just gave you guys like the cheat sheet. That's like everything you need to plug in your spreadsheet, you're done. Now, most people listening to this probably won't use them all correctly, because something in their brain will tell them now is not the time to invest. Investing is scary. I don't have enough money. I'm not smart enough. Those limiting beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
The tools are there. The information's there if you want it. Just when you pick a podcast, I would just say pick one that is like legitimate, like that actually is talking about and the right thing. So like business, investing, the people that have done it have been there a while. Like most of those, all those names that I mentioned before, we've all been in the game a while.
And so we'll chuck a list in the show notes below as well. And also to all those
podcasts.
And also to all the PDFs around like that value-based spending as well, we'll definitely chuck in the show notes below.
Yeah.
Such good advice.
So, to go on, the narrative around the whole personal finance movement can be a bit toxic, leaving people beating themselves up if they overspend, etc., saying, you know, I really shouldn't have spent that much money. And this comes down to all that values-based spending. And I definitely think it's all about the having unrealistic goals and the importance, as you said before, is just starting small. Like, if that is $10 or $20 a week, instead of saying I'm going to save $500 when you're only on $600. Because it really does build confidence, and you don't want to just go all guns blazing and then get chopped down real quickly. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes, sure. So when you read every finance book that's ever written, it basically says save 20% of your, like save 20% and invest that, right? You got 10% for holidays, save 20%. And a lot of people are like, shit, I don't save 20%. I don't have enough money to save 20%. Well, that's okay. I would say, don't take those rules of thumb and be like, that's the gold standard. The gold standard is whatever it is for you. So what I say to people is, well, hey, go and start with 1% savings this week or this month. Then go to 2% next month and work up till you find the right balance. So that might take a year to figure out like what actually works for me. And you know, coming back to the idea of the bigger shovel and just earning more, that second job that you get is the one where you can just, that can be your investing money, or that can be your play money, whichever way you want to think about that. Like, you can mentally account for that in a different way.
Yeah.
And that's probably where you get the maximum bang for your buck. And for the most part, like, the culture around spending is that, like, spending is bad, saving is good. Now, I would say that's wrong, because spending on the right things is actually incredibly good. You get memory dividends from things like holidays, from things like those experiences. There was a study that I often quote. It was more of like a research study, but in the US, they got people to drive through the hills of California in a BMW, and then they got people to drive through the hills in California with like a banged up old car. And actually what they found was that when the BMW was driven not in the hills, there was no extra benefit from being in that car. But then when you drove in the hills with friends in the bomb is when you got the most value, because you were with friends and you're in the hills. Like, that had so much more value, you perceive value, than actually being in the BMW. And so it's about spending on the right things. And for me, like, there's this idea, like, the two words that shouldn't go together are guilty pleasures. If something is a guilty pleasure, I mean, there's bad things that happen in the world for sure. But when it comes to money, a lot of guilty pleasures actually aren't guilty pleasures. They're just pleasures. And we feel bad about them. Like, for example, if you want to go and you want to spend $300 on the weekend having a big night, go and do that, like, for sure. But don't let it become a problem. Like, put money aside for that and be like, yeah, this is what I'm doing, and I'm going to let it rip for this $300 that I got. I'm going to get the most out of this, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
As long as it's a conscious decision, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Don't feel bad about it. That's what it should be for. And we do the same, in psychology, it's the same thing. Like, there's a big idea around when you have anxiety or depression or things like this, that you should set time aside every day to be stressed, set time every day to worry. So, like, you could mentally have time every day where you're worried about things. My life coach recently said to me that, because I struggle to set time aside just to think about things, and she said, just do it while you're brushing your teeth. Just think about the day that's ahead, all the things you're worried about. And literally when you put the toothbrush down, say goodbye to it. Mm. And that's what I do. So I just think about, like, I got to record 3 podcasts. I got to have this meeting. I got to be there at this time. I got to produce this thing. Do that while you're doing brushing your teeth. You've thought about it, move on. And that's been really helpful. And so when it comes to money, it's the same thing. We actually, there's a lot of studies around this, and Nick Majuli in his book, Just Keep Investing or something like this. I can't remember the
name.
Just Keep Buying, yeah. He says in that book that, and he quotes a study that shows that there's more pain inflicted by worrying about not spending enough, not saving enough, than there is in actually the joy of saving it. So, like, the fear of not saving enough is worse than the benefit you get from actually saving. So a lot of people just need to reset the psychology around this and be like, you know what, I'm only saving 1% this week. I've got $10 going into my shares account, or, you know, I'm saving $100 this month and I'm putting that in self-wealth or whatever it is. That's enough. If that's right for you, like, own it, move on. See if you can improve on it next month, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah. Because it is about like enjoying life as well. We touched on this last episode. We can be really serious. Like, finance is like a very serious topic. But End of the day, like, you have one life. Like, you should still enjoy it as well. Like, be responsible, because we literally, Owen just gave you like the handbook of like how you can, over a long period of time, like, become successful with just a 9-to-5 income. But yeah, I guess you still gotta enjoy life.
We know that you're a busy man and you've got another podcast straight after this. So, thanks once again. Thanks for having us. Thanks for having us in the studio and recording these 2 episodes. I'm sure we took a lot away from that. And as always, I know our audience will take a lot away from that as well. So, thank you.
Yeah, no worries, guys. And thanks for talking about finance and investing. It's always good. It's pretty boring sometimes, like, alongside the other stuff. So, yeah, it's good. Just remember those tools that we mentioned. I'd really encourage everyone to take that exercise and think about building a vision board. Just even right now, just write down 3 things that you want to do in the next 10 years, like 3 big things that might seem so out of touch. Write them down. Or if you're with your partner, write them down and just work backwards.
Yeah.
The rest will figure itself out.
And New Year's is coming up. This is the perfect time to kind of implement a lot of these things. So I challenge a lot of people, put this into your New Year's like goals for 2023. Just take literally 30 minutes and set some automation up. Yep. It'll like change your 2023. Thank you.
Love it. Thanks, guys.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. This is a little bit of a pinch me moment for Reese and I. We're currently sitting across from Owen in the Rask office in the city of Melbourne. So thank you for having us, firstly.
Dream studio as well. There's three cameras. We're only used to one.
and our one is like 1080p. So these are all 4K. We're feeling pretty grateful right now.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on the show.
So